I cannot remember how many of the last 20-some years that on the first Sunday of the new year, we have been together at Marin Sangha with my getting a chance to lead a reflection. Those 17 years that I was always doing this, most of those, I was available for that first Sunday. And since I stopped being there every day that I could, every Sunday I could, there's been most of the first Sunday of the year I've been here in this Sangha. And with a great enthusiasm for doing so. So why is that? Why is it that I have this particular time seems so auspicious for practice to me? In part, it is because we are at a human cycle that's been there long before there were any kind of a particular religion as the religions we know today. Because there's, and as far as we can tell, that with the change of the sun and the change of the light, there's always been ceremony around that. There's always been a time. You can imagine that when the light is short or there's less light, one spends more time gathered in our community. And in that way, there's a time of storytelling, of mending, of working out differences, because there we are with less time to be externally oriented and naturally more time for being internally oriented, including making cave drawings and so forth. It just makes sense. And so out of that comes all sorts of rites of spring and rites of the winter, this changing time. And more than that, this internal reflection or imagining in ways that we might improve our conditions, again, externally and internally. Externally, in terms of being able to feed ourselves or be safe, or what the wandering tribe is going to do next, that group of 40 or 50 people wandering through the savannah or somewhere in Asia and so forth. But also internally, and thus there's all of this internal relating to something that is mysterious that we can call spiritual, we can call all of these different words mystical, but nonetheless, the internal experience of the internal reality that something is possible internally, that we're not just journeying externally, we're journeying internally. And so here we are in modern times and in this country where we talk about our New Year's resolutions, things that we want to change. And some of those are external and some of those are internal. And it's good. And the most superficial external, if it's leading to more health, less suffering, then what would possibly be wrong with that? If it's leading to more greed, a more sense of self-absorption, maybe not so wise. That each of us has to determine what is wholesome and unwholesome about the regular taking resolution to bring something different into our life. Another way to look at this time of year and what we're doing is that it's a time to catch up with ourselves. So we don't really have to make a resolution, or we could say that if we catch up with ourselves, the resolutions arise naturally, because we catch up and we look back and we say, well, the way I've done this in terms of how much exercise I've gotten this last year, very mundane exercise, you know, we know we're supposed to be more healthy, but the amount of exercise I've gotten has not been, this isn't wise. I need more exercise than this. Or, oh, the way I've been doing my exercise is acting as though I am still 55 years old, but in fact, I'm 65 or 75 or 85 years old. And so we have recognition that's got wisdom and kindness in it, just in catching up with ourselves, it is natural to have considerations of caring that lead to change. And again, we're differentiating this from this clinging, demanding that a lot of resolutions kind of be infected with. You know, that's natural too, and we're going to do those, but we're not focused on those this evening. And therefore, catching up with ourselves may be something that we've been missing in relation to these resolutions, that we've had this kind of idea and we've been chewing on it, or other people are making resolutions and we make resolutions because we want to participate, but we've not paused. We have failed to pause. We've failed to give our time of being with ourselves without agenda and seeing what arises, to be available to what's true now in this moment, but also in this time of my life, this year of my life, where my heart is now, what are my circumstances, looked at from wisdom and compassion, to catch up with ourselves, to realize, oh, you know, yes, I've known that my late night eating is not skillful, but we've never caught up with ourselves and where we really feel the motivation behind that. And we realize, oh, we realize it with equanimity and compassion. Oh, this is because, you know, there's a set of conditions that create this. Can we let loose of something in that set of conditions? And we're not demanding to fix anything, but we are being available to have a kinder, wiser relationship with ourselves. This is taking this common process of resolutions to a different level, starting with this catching up with ourselves and then being interested in understanding and insight, not meaning heavy psychological so much, but just practical psychological, just the intuitive psychological that would lead us to have a more serious, more in-depth, more reflective way of taking advantage of the cultural momentum of this time of year to realign ourselves in some way that is more aligned in the way that I taught it this evening, where we don't have to deliver. It is directionally true. I've only been emphasizing this in the last couple of years or so. I can't really recall how long, but that we are directionally aligned. So we can have a very specific idea of this is me being kind. And that's great. But we can also be aligned with kindness. And that alignment with kindness can sometimes be accessible to us, whereas our very specific ideas about this are kind of determined, really tight determined, are not so available, or we're too conflicted to be able to even remember that. But we know when we're off our directional alignment. It's pretty easy to do. And so we learn more and more using mindfulness to get clear in relation to the path, in relation to well-being that is less and less based on conditions. And why not do it now, here? Why not? Why not go with the energy of the culture? Allow yourself to be caring with yourself, to be serious about yourself without taking it so seriously, which can make us grim and tight, but rather, well, in so far as possible, this is what I choose. Yeah, I can sign up for this in a way that's loose, flowing, that accepts all of our imperfections, that has a kind of like a surfer riding the waves, like a mountain biker going down the hill, all of those kinds of feelings. We're moving in a natural way rather than an unnatural way. Likewise, there's an archetypal aspect to this. There are large energies that lie in all of us. I've talked about this many times through the years. And these energies that we're motivated by, that we are inspired by, that are somehow we've inherited some of them. Some of these, it could be that being the strong warrior, or this the ever absorbing mother, whatever it is that we have of these larger energies, that we can let those, if we will catch up with ourselves, we realize, oh, well, I used to be motivated this way, but actually I care more about this now, because we paused. Going on retreat's a great way to do that, of course, on a residential retreat or an online retreat. But so is taking a little time each day to just reflect without an agenda other than being available to catch up. Because we're here in the Sangha, we're in a reflective path that is of the Dharma. Everything I've said before now applies for every human being. But because we are students of the Dhamma, practitioners of the Dhamma to very modest degrees, or more serious, more long-term commitment, more study and understanding, whatever degree of that it is, the Dhamma offers its own way of catching up with ourselves, its own way of being kind to ourselves and having wisdom. The Buddha's teaching is about how we relate to our experience. The Eightfold Path is a way to relate to our experience, all of our experience. The four satipatthanas, the four establishments or foundations of mindfulness,
we lose them, Bill?
Yes, I'm not seeing his connection any longer. I think, don't
Bill,
know where
are you there?
He is not. So I don't know whether he had a power outage or somehow disconnected. Hopefully he will reconnect quickly.
We don't have a number or anything.
Let me see if Dana knows anything.
Do you have a phone number?
Yeah. There you go, Dana.
I'll call him.
Thank you.
Yeah, I got a warning. I had an unstable connection, but I wonder if that was referring to him.
No.
Dana's talking to him now.
Okay, he doesn't know why his computer died, but he's going to go to a different computer. But he asked that we take a 3-minute break, and then he'll be back.
Thank you. Well, we're taking a quick break. I just want to mention that when you go to sign up on our website for our day long, you'll also notice we have a list of who our teachers are for every week, most of the time. So just wanted to throw that out.
Thanks, Vita.
Thanks, Vita. Also wanted to just say another word about the about the Donna is all of the information is in the chat for either Philip or for Marin Sangha. And we want to think about the generations of people who have been so generous so that we can be here now, that we can hear these teachings now, 2,600 years later. And we want it to go on for another 2,600 years at least. Thank you.
Philip is really just giving us a moment to reflect.
True.
Dana, thank you so much.
So as we look at this from the Dharma perspective, then we're aligning like our guiding, our North Star becomes the wisdom and the compassion that the Buddha's pointing to. It's not a belief system. Buddhism's not a belief system. It's a way of approaching life that with a set of values having to do with the way we're relating to it that is oriented towards choosing non-suffering over suffering. And so we're not believing in something other than believing in the possibility of our having a deeper, wiser, more compassionate relationship with our experience. And there's this, we are aligned and available in a certain way from the wisdom of the Buddha in this regard. And so, in that way, the simple things I do want to be kind in life. I do want to treat myself kindly, and I do want to be wise in my decisions. And I want to notice when my mind is such that my mind is not allowing me to be that way. That's a Buddhist recognition, but my goodness, is it practical? It's very practical. So our everyday life, the days and the moments of those days can be our Dharma practice. It's taking Dharma to the street of life, and living Dharma on the street of life is, the most masterful retreat of all. You know, that we retreat from being just reactive to the ego's needs being so lost in our personness, more about that on another teaching some other time, that we fail to be what we are already capable of being. And so that's part of the reflection, that what's true now, maybe 2 years ago, last time I checked in with myself about this, I was one way, but maybe now there's other possibility. It's new in some way for me. Maybe because I've gotten older, maybe because of my health challenge, or maybe because I'm not so tense about something. I've actually, without noticing it, I've stopped being demanding in a certain way. I've stopped clinging to an old story. I'm still acting like that old story is so important to me, but really, that's not true when I catch up with myself. Yeah, that was really difficult, but I don't want to hold on to that. I'm not even mad at that person anymore. It's just like, why am I? I've just been carrying this around without noticing that I didn't need to carry it around. That's the opportunity of reflection. And the Dharma gives us such a, constitutes a perspective which, to look at that. But still, we have to do the catching up. we have to be aware of the of what our mind is doing and ways that our heart is bound. So that's the invitation, the requirement. And in terms of doing that, one way of doing that is to look at our attitude. And so right now, what's in my way that I'm holding on to? What do I need to surrender? What is possible right now for me to surrender that I don't have to keep clinging to? It's my interpretation of the past, or my fixation about the future, or this is how I am kind of belief. That's really not an examined or even kind view of ourselves, but just this defensiveness that at one time may have been incredibly important, but maybe not so much now. What is available in this way to us? Through surrendering, through letting go, which is the second of the Eightfold Path, the second of the Four Noble Truths. That's we see in the second noble truth, we see that life is difficult in the first noble truth, but in the second noble truth, the Buddha says what makes it so difficult is our clinging, our grasping, our demanding of wanting things to be this way or that way. And it's our reactivity to what life is. And have we not grown so that there's the possibility at least of considering that we maybe are ready to be less reactive, and that if we bring our mindfulness to those ways that we are reactive, with this being curious, that we can have choice arise. So important to be curious. It's not really mindful if there's no curiosity with it. We're aware something's happening, but it's like we're a barcode reader at the supermarket, milk, 310. But that's not that doesn't really tell us anything of the taste of milk, the taste of life. And so this is this call for that. So surrendering is a very important part of this. You know, when we start to surrender, oftentimes there is a need. There's a need to forgive. To forgive ourselves for this stupid thing we made, this stupid decision we made, or how we let somebody get us to do something, be in some way, be in relationship, whatever that wasn't right for us. And we all this time we've not been able to let it go. Or this thing we did to somebody else where we felt so horrible about having been unskillful in that way, in a relationship, in a something at work, whatever, with your children, whatever it may be, that we realize that we need to forgive ourselves, or we need to forgive another. So we surrender to what is, we surrender to possibility, and we forgive that clenched fist, that scream, as best we're able. We are directionally aligning with forgiving, just as we're directionally aligning with surrendering. When we align and we stay mindful, then it naturally arises this little bits of freedom coming. I've watched this now in a large group of people for enough years that I can say this with confidence in this way. So we as part of any kind of a regarding change or regarding opening, we are accepting the need for surrender, and we're accepting that the need to forgive at times, forgive ourselves, other, forgive life itself. How many people have been angry with God? Even now they're Buddhists and they're still angry with God. You know, it's understandable. Or we're angry at culture, or we're angry at how stupid human beings are,
particularly as one gets older, one can get very irritated because we've seen the movie so many times. I mean, at horror levels. And so we just, I'm done with it. And we kind of get this attitude. Not so useful. Sometimes it's needed because we'd be overwhelmed. But to take identity in that for a long period of time, maybe not so useful to us. So we surrender and we forgive. We forgive life for being the way it is, and therefore we can see the beauty of life even amidst the horror. And that's such an important thing to do, this balance. I sent out a little newsletter recently, and I talked about that just in a line or two, about the importance. We fight against the injustice as best we can in whatever way we can. But for us to forsake personal joy, to forsake personal growth, personal internal release would be like a double crime. It's this realm asks us to bear so much, to not open to the sides of it where it is joy that is not based on getting everything we want, but joy based on this awe of being alive. What a waste. What a waste to not be available to that joy of being alive amidst the horror, and not forgiving the horror, not forsaking our responsibilities in relation to it. And then for if we're going to surrender, if we're to life and be available, the surrender available is a surrendering to it's like this. Then we do forgiving as best we're able. That can easily deteriorate into a spiritual bypass, the kind of tuning out without this third of these three, which is accountable, being accountable, choosing to be accountable. Yes, I've in my relationship with my sibling now, here we are in our 50s, and I'm still in the same way being with my, I'm gonna surrender the way I am with my sibling, and I'll forgive myself and forgive my sibling, mostly my sibling's fault anyway, but I'll forgive all of that. And then, okay, now I've got this great attitude, so now I'm walking around, I'm very Buddhist in my attitude. No. That's a fantasy. That's not an aspiration. Aspiration has in it accountability, as far as I can tell. And I'm not presenting myself as someone who is always accountable, but rather I am someone who aspires to be accountable, so that we can get on the same page here. It's very difficult at times to be accountable in small ways, even that you would think we should be able to do that. We don't really have to get upset with people in traffic. We really don't have to do that. Surely that's within our range of possibility. And yet we can say, oh, I'm going to stop being like that, having these bad thoughts about other people when I'm driving, and then not. And that's where the accountability comes in relation to how you're treating yourself around these practical parts of life, diet, exercise, rest, all of that. Accountability about your internal experience, accountability, your attitude towards others, how you're still begrudging yourself something, begrudging yourself your limitations. Do we still need to be begrudging ourselves our limitations? The limitations are difficult enough to work with. Why do we have to begrudge ourselves, be mad at ourselves about them? You know, we don't need that. So we're changing the way we're relating. And that requires accountability. So that would be, that's my reflection for you this evening, that there is a naturalness to this catching up with ourselves and letting wisdom and compassion lead to aspiration. And resolution to, in fact, do. And then there's the whole Dharma depth of it. And we can go back and forth between those two. And my suggestion is that those of you who are really practicing as Dharma practitioners, that you deliberately go back and forth, that you more and more treat any kind of resolution, aspiration you have that you wish to experience it in Dharma terms, Dharma mind, see it through Dharma eyes, hear it through Dharma ears. That is my suggestion for you for this new year. So with that, if there's anyone that has questions or comments, we'll have a few minutes here to do a few questions or comments that if anything seems appropriate.
Philip?
Yes.
Hi. If I may ask you, you mentioned reflecting without agenda. Can you explain a little bit more?
Yes.
Thank you.
I forgot to ask if people will raise the, you know, if you go down to the, everybody I guess knows how to do this now, the reaction thing at the bottom of your screen and raise your mechanical hand, I'll know you're, and so I'm glad you just spoke up, Lane, because I'd forgotten to do that. And yes, so reflection without agenda means that we are, the Venerable Sumedho would lead meditation and what's this, you know, this kind of just reflecting, what is this? What is this? So it may be an emotion you're having. What is this emotion? And you're not saying, oh, I'm going to fix this emotion. I'm trying to get something out of it. But I wish to know it more deeply, to be available to it. From this, with the, again, with wisdom and compassion. It's, so you're not, it's not a fixing attitude. I wish to know this more clearly. I wish to have a more skillful relationship with it, be more wholesomely motivated. Those are my values, but I'm not setting out with an agenda. So here I am. Maybe it's your ex, you know, or maybe it's a child that you've had some estrangement from, and you, in each instance, you've been driven by your agenda. You reflect without agenda, from wisdom and compassion. What's true for me now? How do I wish to act, not to get somewhere, but to be free? To have the freedom of the Buddha in that way. That help him? Thank you. And Annie.
Hey, Philip.
Hi.
I was just thinking what to ask you, and I thought, like the old days, and ask you my current personal problem. Because you were so patient and always telling me, you know, how to manage things or helping me to manage things,
mm-hmm.
I think. And so I decided to celebrate Hanukkah this year. My sister Hillary died on August 15th, and so I didn't really want to do Christmas. So I decided to do Hanukkah, and I found a next door to me in the next door. How to do the prayers for Hanukkah and stuff like that. So we have the candles and everything. We did a lot of gift exchanging during the Hanukkah, which I've since found out is not really how Hanukkah is supposed to be. But anyway, we did that. And I don't know if it was that, like the whole love languages thing, but I kind of fell in love with this fellow and I didn't know him very well. And now I'm sort of stuck with that. And he's an unrecovered nicotine and alcohol addict. So I just wondered if you had any advice for me. Good.
So there is, you can watch your choices around that in terms of what brings you suffering and what doesn't. In terms of like, are you demanding him to be other than he is? Are you submitting yourself to something that is not, it doesn't, that the effect of that is you're present for it, is not wholesome for you? Or is it fine to spend time with this person just as he is? And but based on your inner experience of it, not your approval or disapproval, per se, but what is the actual effect on you? both now and over time. So you reflect right now, and then over a week, over whatever time it's been, a month, you reflect in that way. And if there's caring that is being exchanged and it does not seem to be unwholesome caring, then that's terrific. If it's in some way unwholesome, then are you willing to do that even for the high of having someone to be excited about? Is that really your values? And don't be so tied about it, but you're just trust your practical sense that you are aligned. If you're not aligned, then you don't have any basis for making a decision in any given moment. And so you say, okay, if I'm going to be with this person, I don't want to spend time when that person's smoking. So you just say that I can't spend time with you smoking. But you don't be uptight about it. You just go, this is just the way it is. You're just soft, non-judging. This is just what works for me and not. That's the kind of advice I would give you around that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Kind with yourself and maybe a little amused with yourself.
I'm pretty amused.
Okay.
Follow-up question about my sister who passed. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
My sister Hillary, she was always one to leave early, it seems like, and she left early of her own accord, sort of like she jumped from a bridge into a creek bed. So, I mean, that's a big topic, maybe, but I've tried to get into some grief groups, and they're just go around and everyone tells their story, terrible stories of things like that. Back of a daughter who's only 28 to pass, that kind of thing. And then after you go around, everyone just says, well, okay, bye, you know. And so I don't know.
That I don't know about. I've not been in a grief group, so I'm not qualified to know about a grief group. But in terms of your sister, that your sister lived her life, and the invitation is for you to continue to love your sister and the life she had, and as she was, because there is no other life. That is the life she had. And so you notice the part that you admired about her and you cared about her, and you're well wishing for her in this journey now, and leaving the rest of it alone, the justifying, the tendency to take on guilt, the what ifing, all of that, or blaming someone else, or all of that, letting all that go, and just, oh, this too is part of life. And it's suffering, but how I relate to that suffering makes the difference. So that's the way I would understand the Dhamma view towards that.
Thank you very much, Philip.
You're most welcome. Shannon, please.
Hi, thank you, Philip. Thank you for everything you've said. My mom died in October. And it's been, you know, really, you know, a lot of work I've had to do to, you know, like catch up with myself. I really like those topics. And my question is, you know, my mom, when she died, you know, I feel like she wasn't at peace with what was going on in her life. And maybe at the tail end she was, but I want to know, karmic wise, I mean, is there anything I can do to assist her?
That's that is a subjective question, and I'm not going to get into I'm not making any proclamations about that. But how would you, to me, what would be your wise way of relating to her, wishing her well in her journey, to whatever degree there is a journey, by naming for her those things that are very that you admired about her, that you valued about her, and how you're caring for her, naming that and your well wishing for her and holding her in that way, if you're doing any kind of a ceremony for her in an ongoing way, a daily way. That is what I have found to seem to bring peace to people. And who knows if it has any larger effect, but it certainly seems to be aligning in a way that people feel at peace with it at some point. And again, not demanding, not excusing anything, but focusing on that was admired good there, her humanness, and not her the various imperfections we all have, but her humanness. And if there's anything you're begrudging her, letting loose of that, of course.
Yes, definitely. We had a very, it was a wonderful end of journey for both of us in our relationship.
Well, that's good to hear. And I'm sorry for your loss. So I think we're at the end of our evening here. I'm not seeing any other hands raised. You know, human life is so precious. We in cultures take human life with such casualness. It's like unbelievable, but nonetheless, that's what we do. Even while we proclaim how precious it is, so that's the opposites that we have to live with. And if one is going to grow in this realm, it is the opposites of praise and blame and so forth, and our finding our own resolution in relation to that. And so maybe just one question. Do I aspire to be available to life more and more in the moments of my life? Do I aspire to this? And if so, then use the meditations. The meditations like we did tonight are readily available on Dharma Ground and limited on Dharma Seed, but these various places you can find them. But really, in your daily life, you pause throughout the day and catch up with yourself. And am I available to life now? Here in this moment, am I available to life? And don't be dismayed when many times you're not. Or am I available to the Dharma? And many times you're not. You're not to be dismayed about that, but in this moment, you have choice. You see, we're always coming back to choice, and including this choice to surrender what we're clinging to. And it's directional. That we can do. If we get focused on the end results, we collapse down and contract again.